Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Nowadays, you can get whatever you want on the internet. This is how Amazon came to be known as the Everything Store. But not long ago, if you wanted to be able to shop for clothes, tools, toys, a haircut, and maybe new tires, there's a good chance your Everything Store was a company based right here in Illinois.
Does fighting traffic when you shop almost make you blow your top? Put an end to traffic fears. It's very easy to get to Sears.
Why do I shop at Sears? It's easy for me. I can pick up tennis balls, children's clothing, torque wrenches, and a dish all in the same shop. Use my charge card, and it's just simple and easy.
Last year, Sears tuned up 1 million engines. At Sears, we install confidence. And best of all, we do it right next door to all this.
There's more for your life.
Sears was a retail colossus, and it was based right here in Illinois. But keeping that company here in Illinois came at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks. And there's a question around that. Was it worth it? This was the subject of a recent investigation by ProPublica and the Daily Herald newspaper based in Chicago's northwest suburbs. The reporter behind that story is David Bernstein. He's an investigative journalist from the Chicago area and a local reporting network fellow at ProPublica. David, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So for our listeners who might be on the younger side, and maybe they've only known Sears as a struggling and recently bankrupt retailer, can you remind us of what this company once was?
Yeah, it was the Amazon of its day. It was, I mean, this is it started in the 19th century. It started as a watch company originally by a Minnesota train employee who happened to come upon a box of watches that were unsold, and he sold them at the train station and made some money and said, hey, this could be a business. And so eventually he moved to Chicago and started it as a watch company, and it soon started selling everything. And it became the world's largest retailer because based on catalog sales, you could basically sell things that you couldn't get everywhere, that you might be able to only buy in a city, you could now find wherever you lived. You could get appliances, and you could get clothes, and you could get all the tools and all these things that Americans needed, and Sears provided that to the world, and it grew, and it became the Amazon of its day.
Am I remembering correctly that you could once like order a Conestoga wagon and then a house, like a modular house at
you
one
could,
point?
You could literally buy your house from Sears. They had a home division that sold, that you could pick your house out of a catalog, and you could pick the finishes, you could pick the style. There's actually several communities in the Chicagoland area that have a number of Sears homes, and it's become, there's sort of a kind of a subculture of historians who like to try to find Sears houses around the country.
And it's a symbol of that dominance. The company occupied a pretty significant piece of real estate in downtown Chicago, right? People will remember the Sears Tower.
Sure, they did. They moved. Originally, they were in the North Lawndale area. They had off of Holman Square neighborhood, and then they built the Sears Tower, which became they wanted to make a statement. They were the largest retailer in the world, and they wanted to show the world that they were a mighty, mighty company, and they built the tallest building in the world to prove it. And in 1988 to 99, they decided to sell the Sears Tower, and that sort of led to the move to Hoffman Estates.
Yeah. So tell me what was that? So that's Sears. That's where Sears was as we come to the start of your story in 1989. What was Hoffman Estates? This is not like a place with like a main street and, you know, the old railroad town or anything like that from the 1800s.
Right. No, this was up until the mid 1950s, it was mostly cornfields and soybean fields and farmland. And the father-son builder, Jack and Sam Hoffman, who lived in the Phoenix area, had heard that the state was going to be building a tollway out in that area. And they decided to basically buy some farmland up there as sort of speculative to start a new community. They bought about 160 acres, and they built a built a subdivision of houses, and those sold out quickly. And this was a time in the 50s when a lot of people were leaving the city and were looking for more affordable housing in the far-flung sort of suburbs of Cook County. So it sort of grew into this, it grew very quickly into this bedroom community of a lot of housing. And what it sort of as it grew, it also sort of grew an identity, an inferiority complex to its neighbor Schaumburg, which was sort of Schaumburg was this sort of suburb that was kind of the powerhouse of the northwest suburbs, and it had a big shopping mall, and it had a lot of office buildings, and it was basically a big commercial center of that area. And they sort of the leaders of Hoffman Estates sort of looked with envy to Schaumburg to say, hey, we want some of that tax dollars, and so how do we get that?
All right, so and if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with David Bernstein about his series of stories from ProPublica and the Daily Herald about Sears and the tax breaks it wrung from local communities in the state over the years. So let's start where or go to where your story starts, I should say, which is
Sure.
Wrigley Field, June 1989, Expos at Cubs. What happens at that game that's significant to this story?
Well, the Cubs lost 5-0, and the Expos knocked him out of first place. But the real story there was what was happening kind of behind the scenes. And as I said earlier, the Sears had made the decision to sell the Sears Tower, and they were looking for a large tract of land. They wanted a suburban campus in a metro area. They had certain criteria. They wanted to be near an airport. They wanted to have good transportation access off of a highway and that sort of thing. And they were looking at a number of cities and a number of states. Dallas was a big contender. Charlotte in North Carolina was a big contender. And they were competing fiercely for Sears to move there. And at the time, Governor James Thompson did not want to see that happen, and he sort of pulled out all the stops. And the city, the governor's office, and the company executives had been negotiating for months, kind of quietly behind closed doors. And they were really worried about about losing Sears and all these jobs. At the time, Sears had about 6,000 jobs at its headquarters. And that's a lot of jobs, and losing just sort of the prestige. This was a think about this. This was a sort of a period in the 80s when Chicago and Illinois as a whole was sort of struggling, kind of in the sort of an economic downturn. And they were seeing sort of factories close, and they really were desperate to try to avoid becoming a Rust Belt state and a Rust Belt city in Chicago being a Rust Belt city.
Right, do we go
So
the way of Cleveland and Detroit? And
exactly,
yeah,
yeah, and
exactly.
that was a big fear. And so you saw at the time that these that states were starting to compete really fiercely for foreign auto businesses, factories like Honda and Toyota and companies and Volkswagen and companies that were foreign car dealers who were sort of building factories in the Midwest and in other places. And they were throwing money and incentives at these car dealerships, these car companies to come to their state. And so this was one of the first times a big headquarters had decided to kind of pull the same sort of stunt where they sort of announce that they're going to be moving, and they sort of start taking, it was almost like an auction. States were putting together bids and proposals, and Governor Thompson did not want to see them leave. And so they met at a Cubs game, and they sealed the deal there. And the deal was that Hoffman, the company was going to move to Hoffman Estates, which was, and they were going to be given a really sweet land deal where they would get 800 acres of prime real estate right off of the tollway for virtually free. They were going to create a basically what is called a tax increment financing district, which is basically like a property tax abatement district, where the money goes, where all the tax dollars, the property tax dollars that are created out of this district, go back into the district instead of the local taxing districts.
So how much money ultimately is the deal for Sears in terms of all the, you know, all in, all the governments that yeah, gave this tax money to Sears? How much is this worth to Sears over the years?
It's a good question. It's a hard one to answer. And say they were awarded over $500 million in what they were awarded.
I want to emphasize that you said $500 million with a B, $500 million.
Yes, there were basically two deals. There was the original deal in 1989, which was the state kicked in about it was supposed to be about $60 million for infrastructure improvements to the area, and it became $80 million with overruns. And then the Village of Hoffman Estates created this TIF district. And so one of the things that was very important to Sears is they wanted a lot of land for their headquarters, which was a massive building. It's about, you know, almost half the size of the Pentagon. And it's so they wanted a lot for their headquarters, but they also wanted extra land that they could develop for themselves. They would be the developers, and they would build an office park on it. And then they would become the landlord. They would collect all this. They would collect all this money. One of the big regrets they had with the Sears Tower is they were one of the early pioneers to move kind of to the western sort of southwestern fringes of the loop. And when they moved there into the Sears Tower, they saw all these other buildings crop up, and they missed out on what they thought was a lot of potential real estate money. And so they wanted to have extra land to develop for their own. And so they were basically given this land, almost 800 acres to develop for themselves.
So we, and I should say, you're listening to the 21st. We're speaking with David Bernstein about his piece for ProPublica and the Daily Herald at a great price, the true cost of the Sears headquarters deal. And we've only got about 4 minutes left in our conversation, so I want to kind of move quickly through a couple of areas here.
Sure.
You wrote about the real costs this imposed on local governments, and by extension, the people who rely on those governments for services like educating their children. Can you tell me a little bit about District 300 and what their claims are?
Sure. So District 300 is a school district that's based in Algonquin, and it's a huge school district. It's 118 miles. It just so happens that the district overlaps with the Sears TIF area, with the economic area that was made for Sears. And so as part of that, the tax dollars that get generated by the Sears headquarters, millions and millions of dollars every year, and by the other office buildings and other retail and restaurants that have now since come to that area, all that money, normally 60% of that property taxes in the state go to the local school district. Here, the money gets diverted into a fund that gets then redistributed mostly to Sears. For developing the area. So, on one hand, the argument can be made that beforehand it was just cornfields, and they weren't getting much anyway. And so all this is extra money that they're receiving anyway, and it's been great for the school district. But the school district has been missing out on hundreds of millions of dollars over the 30 years of that would have normally gone to the school district. And when in 2012, when they extended the deal, normally the original 1989 deal went for 23 years, just like a normal TIF does. And in 2011, Sears threatened to move out of the state again. And in 2012, the state passed a 15-year extension. So the actual TIF district, the special taxing district for Sears, won't expire until 2027.
Wow. And there's so much in your story that we're not going to have time to get to. And I will say we will tweet out a link to it at our show page, which is 21st Show on Twitter, 21ST Show, and also 21stshow.org. There's a whole story you have about how Sears was, you know, in terms of like living up to its commitment, it was counting baristas and janitors in the number of people that it said it employed. But I want to sort of step back and look at the big picture here. The bottom line lesson in your story, I think, is like we should be examining maybe what we're using these, you know, so-called tax incentives for luring businesses. What did you come away with thinking about tax incentives as a matter of state and local government policy? And again, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think when in this time, especially with when coronavirus makes us is blowing a huge budget hole in all the municipality budgets, you have to think about how you spend your money wisely. Is giving one single company a $500 million in tax incentives a good deal? Especially a company that now is in 2018 went bankrupt. One of the things is that these deals become very easy for politicians to pass, and they after they get done, few people are even looking at whether they're effective or successful, or if they're good deals at all. They just sort of, and they don't, because they don't directly cost a taxpayer, you don't see it directly on your tax bill. It's almost it seems lost to a lot of people that they are actually paying more for the for this company. And at the time, it's, you know, Sears is still a multi-billion dollar company. Does it need tax incentives to move? These are questions, especially when resources are tight, that I think elected officials need to be thinking about.
David Bernstein is an investigative journalist from the Chicago area. His story was produced for the local reporting network at ProPublica and the Daily Herald. It's called At a Great Price, The True Cost of the Sears Headquarters Deal. Like I said, we'll tweet it out. We'll put it on our show page. It's well worth reading. David, thanks so much for being here today on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian. It was a pleasure. I appreciate it.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.